Jen Love, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. And welcome, everyone, to the very first Fundraisers Book Club. Isn't this exciting?
It's very exciting. It's enabled me to go back and read some books that I've not read for a while, to read some new ones. And I'm looking forward over the next weeks and months of chatting to people and learning new things about them. So, yes.
I guess we started this Fundraisers Book Club for a couple of fun ideas, mostly because we wanted to inspire and encourage other fundraisers to read alongside us and with each other. Some old titles, some of the titans and the classics of our sector, and also some newer titles is kind of our goal. We'll be asking throughout our book club for people to vote on what they want to read next. Today, what we're going to do, because it's our first meeting of the book club, today we're going to do, I'm going to interview Mark about this, one of the first book we've selected for the club, and then for the next one, we'll want everybody to be reading along with us. So the first book we've selected for the Fundraisers Book Club is Donor Care by the great, late, wonderful John Hayden. This book has come out very recently, we lost John too soon, and when this book was really his swan song. He wanted to get all of his thinking and his genius into a place that others could benefit from down the road, and make sure that he captured all the things he'd been thinking about and working on for decades. John and I knew each other through the nonprofit storytelling community. John was involved with that group, as I have been, and I was always impressed and delighted to hear from John. He was a real sparkler. So I am going to ask Mark a handful of questions about this wonderful book, and so let's dive in. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, so the book is called Donor Care, How to Keep Donors Coming Back After the First Gift. And care is actually the whole backbone of the book. Connect, appreciate, reply, encourage. So Mark, can you unpack for us what the care framework is, how it works?
I can indeed. That's going to need a long answer.
Good.
The key things are that the books, one of the things I like about the book is they're almost like two types of book that you can have. There's the how to do it, tick boxes, you do X, and then you've got those others which are much more about the philosophy behind it, the why we do and how we do. And this one is a combination of the two, but it's almost like a philosophy of fundraising. It's an approach to living. And John talks about in here, obviously, the storytelling stuff, but he talks about his Buddhism. Mm-hmm. He gives you advice on, things like go outside, drink more water, eat the rainbow. There are all those elements. So it's about self-care as much as it is about caring for donors. But care is quite simple. It's a simple acronym. There are four points that he goes through in the book, and there's four chunks, and it's really easy to read. Some books are you struggle, but this you can sit down and you can go through it. I've reread it over the last couple of days. But care, connect. You connect with donors. Second, you appreciate. Third, you reply. You ask again, and finally, you encourage people to give again. So they are the three key elements. And John's got different stories to illustrate all of those elements. But the key point that I think, coming back to the issue you raised, because this is, you know, was John's last book, and anyone who's read, I think, Facebook Fundraising for Dummies will have a John Hayden book in their house, and most of us have one of those somewhere. There was less fear there. You know, obviously it was like, I'm going to tell you how it is. I'm going to tell you how people screw up, and I'm going to tell you the problems it creates. And I'm also going to give you direction on how you can do better. And I think that's the key thing that we have to thank John for. He didn't hold back. And the opening point is the key one for me, that he sees the number one problem is a lack. And he says it's an unintentional lack, but a lack of donor care. And what that has is two problems. One, poor retention. And, you know, he's got loads of stats about the number of people who never give again. But also, and this is what we find in our research, lower expectations from donors. You know, I don't expect to have a relationship. I just give more money.
I give because it matters to me, not because of any of the way in which I feel appreciated or valued or connected to the impact of my donation. I give because of me, not because of how I feel or how I'm treated.
Yeah, and that's the point that runs through that. And, you know, some of those standard metrics that keeping a donor is, you know, it's 10 times more effective than going out and recruiting a new one.
Right.
Yeah, but focusing, and within this, there are like so many bullet points. Mm. 10 things that you've got to do to welcome a donor. 10 ways you can lose a donor. And it's packed full of those. It's one of those things that you flick through. And as I was rereading it, I was sending emails to, you know, my team saying, we've got to do this. We've got to do that. You know, I've been fundraising 30 odd years.
Yeah.
And it's full of points like that. So, you know, you buy this book within 20 minutes, you'll have covered the cost. It's a very, very, very good.
So I'm interested in two things you said there, and we can unpack a couple of other things as we go on. But one of the things you talked about was about how it's fearless that John wrote this from a place of with nothing to hold back, no reason to be cautious or careful or keep any sacred cows. Wouldn't it be amazing if more fundraisers behaved and wrote and existed like that, just in general?
Yeah.
You know, there's so much caution, there's so much fear, there's so much, you know, fear of judgment, fear of emotion, and it especially right now in the middle of this pandemic, you know, we still are confronting charities who are saying, oh, I don't think it's the right time to ask, oh, we're not on the front line, you know. And if we could just rattle that fear cage and help people see that they're doing that from a place of self-preservation, not from a place of what's actually helpful or useful to the world right now, right?
Absolutely. We're on our third stage of the giving in the time of coronavirus research. Mm-hmm. And if you ask me what the number one problem that charities have is, donors don't think they need that charity needs the money because they've not been asked.
Right.
That's the fundamental. And that's going to be a big problem coming around the other side.
Yeah.
Because organizations have gone out there. They have built new relationships. And, you know, if they're doing well, they've engaged those supporters. And it's not that people are going to stop giving. It's going to be that they might switch their giving.
Right.
And so, you know, that's the key point. When you make stuff up, when it's not based on evidence, it can come back and bite you.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing, you know, about this book. It is based on experience.
Yeah.
It's full of case studies and conversations.
Yeah.
That he's had with various different people at different organizations, you know, all about, you know, pretty much all about thanking. He uses the same model that you do. He may even have got it from you, but, you know, the ask, the thank, the report back model.
Yeah.
He's added to it.
Yeah.
But it's that very, very, very simple approach. And it's just packed full of simple tips. And yeah, it's, there's a lot of, yes, why don't we do more of this?
And I think that ask, thank, report, repeat cycle, I heard of it first from Stephen Stream from the Better Fundraising Company. So I think that's probably where that alignment happened. But that's definitely part of our manifesto as well.
There's loads of credits in the book.
The other thing that is interesting about that I liked about what you said there too, and just in the little introductory part here, is that it's readable. You know, yeah. I think over the course of this fundraising book club, we're going to push people in some directions to be reading some books that are quite dense or academic, or the author comes from a different place, or the author has different intentions. But this is one of the ones that I agree is just it's wonderfully. I mean, knowing John, it's just it's chatty and conversational and full of stories. Okay, so let me ask you another question. What of all the fundraising books that you've read and skimmed, what did you learn uniquely from this one? What was something in this one that stood out?
Yeah, that's a toughie. I think one of the things that it drove home for me is, it probably relates to storytelling from this, because obviously, one of the things that John is talking about, is you're not just telling a story. Fundraising is not about telling stories. It's about giving a story to tell. Mm-hmm. And he's got some great ways of illustrating the power of that. And there was one in there. Have you ever heard his story about the eBay, buying the stuff from eBay?
Yes, yes.
And that one I loved, that they spent, I can't remember who it is, but he recounts the story. They spent $250 on buying stuff from eBay. And then whoever did this sold them, but with stories attached. And he talks about the little tray with the duck head on it.
And he
spoke about, he said that when that was on eBay, it was his or the person who did it, they described it as their father's. Every day he'd come in, pop the keys and the wallet on there, and it sold for like $75. And that's the key point. When we're writing our appeals, when we're asking for money, we've got to remember that it's, and this is another point that John makes, that it's really hard to connect to an inanimate object when there is no value. A value is something that we ascribe, or it's something that we can give. And that's what we as fundraisers are doing, that when we tell that story, that's when we are going to be successful. I remember writing a letter once for ActionAid years ago, and the opening line was about a little boy who learned how to mimic parrots, and he could get them to come out of the tree. He was that good. But that was the opening line. And when John talks about connection, that's what that story does.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the little boy. It's a little boy who can do bird sounds so well that he attracts, and suddenly you've got a person there. Yeah. Rather than somebody who just needs help.
Yeah.
And that's the key thing. Yeah. And when John talks about connection, you connect before you ask. And you connect through, you can do it with animals as well, but you can connect through people, or you can connect through things if you think about the little duck train. But that was the point.
But it's the unifying connector there is the story, is the fact that it comes from a story. And one of the things that if there's a knock on, I hear this every once in a while and it drives me mad, is people saying, well, aren't we kind of past post storytelling? We've been doing storytelling at conferences for 1,000 years when we used to have conferences. At what point do we kind of are we post storytelling? Are we storytelling fatigue? Are we over all this? And I think this is not, in fundraising, we're not telling stories for the sake of stories. I'm also a voracious reader of novels and other forms of fiction and books. And those are storytelling for storytelling's sake for me. I read those because I want to know what's happening with my current favorite, Dr. Ruth Galloway, because I'm in love with this character. But storytelling for fundraising is storytelling for action and storytelling to drive gifts. So it's not just that you're telling a wonderful story about a boy who can summon parrots from the tree. You're doing it because you're making a connection with that person, and then you're making them they come alive in a different way, and you feel more connected to them. And so John has always been his life philosophy was around storytelling for for change, for action, which is unlike, not unlike our friend Ken Burnett in his book, Storytelling Can Change the World. Same principles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the stories that go through this book really help illustrate some important points. There was, have you heard the story about you've probably heard all these because I never went to the storytelling conference, but you've heard the story about Aïssa from Niger. Have you heard that?
No. This
sums up. This sums up the book, and it sums up storytelling.
Okay. Wow. So, I'm ready.
There's a story in there. A woman called Aïssa from a very poor community in Niger, and she has a child. I think it's her first child, and the women take the children when they're collecting water. It's not women's job in that village to collect water, and they're quite heavy earthenware pots that they carry. Mm-hmm. And I think this is one of her first times going with her daughter tied to her back. And he talks about how she went to the well, and this rope, and you have to get the bucket and things like that. And she was leaning down, and she slips. And this well is a concrete well. Falls down, crack, snaps her collarbone.
Oof.
On the way down, with a child down the well. That's all he tells you. That's all he tells you in the book. How do you feel?
Oh, gutted.
What happened to Aïssa? What happened to the little girl?
The unfinished story.
Yeah, and that's what we do in fundraising. What we do in fundraising is we give you that, and you give your money, but we don't give you that back. And he doesn't tell you. He says, go online, search Aïssa Falls Down the Well. It's a charity water story. And you find out what happens. Mm. And that's how powerful. If you're watching this now and you do it, there's your answer to why storytelling still works.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we are not post-storytelling. Yeah.
Well, and I think that, the storytelling, it's such a layered conversation around storytelling because, there are ways in which we need to tell stories, and in that example, sometimes an unfinished story is the best kind of fundraising story because you say, I don't know how this is going to end. I can tell you that this person is in distress or this animal is in distress and here's what they need and here's how we could help them.
Yeah.
But we can't help them without you.
Yeah.
And that unfinished story, it can be incredibly impactful. So then the other half of that would be that when the donor has given, taken action, then you come back to them and say, I'm thrilled to tell you that, made it possible and everybody's safe.
Yeah, and if we, one of the models that we talk about at Blue Frog is we call it the EastEnders model. Do you have EastEnders in Canada?
We might. I don't know what EastEnders is.
It's a soap. So it's an ongoing soap. I don't know what the big soaps are in Canada or the US, but it's an ongoing soap.
So let's just bypass it because there would be the Canadian soaps would be not worth another second of discussion.
But if you look at the model of any soap, there's always three stories that are ongoing. So one is just starting, one is just building to that climax, and the other one is finishing. And they're always working in unison. And that's why you watch a soap.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I'm really excited about finding what's happening. And then bubbling under is another storyline. And it picks you up and it carries you. Mm. And that's what we do with newsletters.
Yes.
Yeah, so, we have appeals, which are the big problem, really. As John says, ask, thank, and report back. Ask is the sad story. Mm-hmm. Thanking is the happy story, and that and the reporting back is a mixture of the two.
Right.
And it's that same model that you're constantly sharing that information, but you're also answering. You're giving people, here's the jeopardy, and here's how you resolve that. And they're the key things that comes from is obviously something that. you know, is another reason why you should read stories.
Okay, so what about when you got through the book and you said that, you know, even getting into it very early, you were already firing emails off to your team about doing this and doing that. What do you think are a couple of big takeaways that you think people can kind of, that are relatively easy, you know, not easy, but you know what I mean? Like something that people read this book and then you know you'll be able to act on this quite quickly.
Yeah.
Some quick ones.
Yeah, number one that he's got there is, he has another story. I'll do this one. Have you heard the Ozzy Osbourne story, Black Sabbath?
Yes, I've heard the Ozzy Osbourne story.
Okay, so Ozzy Osbourne, he gets slung out of Black Sabbath, needs someone else to play guitar, and he ends up auditioning, and there's a guy called Randy Rhoads. Mm-hmm. And when Randy Rhoads turns up to audition, he's not dressed up like a Jimi Hendrix impersonator. He literally is there with his little guitar and a practice amp. And Ozzy says, well, if that's your kit, you're going to be good. I'll have you. And it's that point. Be different. Do different. Stand out is the point. And he talks about giving in the book. Give to five other charities in your sector. And most of his is online. He's talking about giving online. And see what they do. Mm-hmm. And do different. And he highlights there. He says, you know, rarely will you get, you know, one of my suggestions is always give twice to an organization. Get yourself into the, this person is more than just a prospect, they're interested.
Right.
And see if you get the same email and see if you get anything different. And that's what John is highlighting. Mm-hmm. Look what other people do and do different. And, you know, there's a whole series of very, very simple ideas that you can use for online giving. You know, and he's talking very simple things that so many people don't do. You know, tracking donor conversions with just, you know, unique URLs. You know, when people click through to your thank you page, try and give them an action so you can measure engagement. You know, can we send you this? Will you sign this petition? Is it all of those little actions? And, you know, if you go online and give, you know, $20, £20 to five different organisations in your sector, see who treats you best, see what you want to copy, and then how can you make yourself different? Because if someone cares about a cause, they may be well be giving to other organisations in that sector.
Right.
You know, they might be looking for, you know, the organisation that they engage with for the rest of their life. And
what I love about what John talks about that it's not just about doing different in terms of authenticity, you know, so that you're actually doing different, you know, like Randy Rhoads showed up and was his authentic self, you know, showing up as our true selves is important. But so that authenticity about doing things different, but that are true to you. The other half of that too is around, you know, in marketing, with marketing concept of USP, you know, unique selling proposition, what you do that no one else does. And in the charitable sector, we have that too. At the agents, we call it your URG, your unique reason to give. So if you give to five or six different environmental organizations, as I do, as many of us do, I can tell you very specifically why I support each one uniquely. And I'm very clear on why I support the organizations that I do, even if they're in the same kind of vein or category. So organizations that can do the work to identify their URG, what they do uniquely, what they do that no one else does as effectively, and make that authentic voice the way that you ask and thank and report and repeat, you know, that you won't get into issues of mission drift where you're a charity that's suddenly doing something different, chasing a shiny new object. There's a lot of strength and power in that. So did you ever meet John? Mark?
No, all our communication was on Twitter. You know, that was, you know, it was a bit like where I met you and John on Twitter. But luckily, you know, I can't remember where we first bumped into each other, probably one of the Toronto.
I think it was Congress, yeah.
Yeah, you know, with Tony Elisher. But all my conversations were, you know, were around Twitter. I think we spoke once. On an actual conversation, but But yeah, it was normally, can I borrow this? Will you share that?
There's probably lots of people watching who knew John from, you know, Twitter only. But to the point we were just making, John was the authentic John on Twitter, just the same way as he would be in person. So the John that showed up at his keyboard every day to write stories and connect with his community and support other fundraisers is the same guy. I mean, he was authentic through and through. Well, I think we've only got a couple of minutes left. So I wanted to ask you one last question about the book, which is, what do you hope, like, what was there anything that you thought, oh, I wish there was more about this? I wish there was more on, you know, was there anything, like, if we could be so lucky to have a sequel, what are some of the ideas that are introduced that you'd like to see more about?
The one area was that John talks a lot about monthly giving. You know, direct debits, regular giving, as we include in the UK, and that's what I'd like to have a conversation with him about, because obviously in the UK we have a very mature monthly giving market, and in North America, in many other countries around the globe, it's like, go out and get your regular gift. Get your regular gift, because they're going to stick with you forever, and they're worth so much more. It's not the case in the UK. It's not the case. In the UK, particularly with face-to-face recruitment, attrition is super high, no pays are high, like text giving, you know, massive attrition rates. And that's what I'd love to have the conversation with him about. You know, because he says one great thing in there. He says that you should have different journeys for different donors. And he talks about your one-off donor, that they need to be shown that, you know, that they made the right decision. You know, somebody's given twice, that's the sort of time when you should sign someone up to a regular gift, and that's exactly it. When I started out in fundraising, you know, there was a mantra, two gifts in 18 months. That's when you move someone to a regular gift. And you can do it from the get-go, but you don't necessarily have that level of loyalty. But that's the point.
I bet you the end to that story would be, it's two gifts, whether that takes 2 weeks or 18 months, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's based on the donor schedule, not the charity schedule.
And that's the key point. It's what works for the donors. And when we were chatting about coronavirus, and I discussed the anniversary appeal for coronavirus, which you called the
Coronaversary.
That needs to be in your schedule now. In the UK, 23rd of March. You know, what did you help achieve over the last year? And, you know, it's an important point. So it's, you know, the anniversaries are the anniversaries that work for the donor, not for you. It's not, oh, we always do an Easter appeal. Yeah. Next year's Easter appeal, unless you're a religious organization, coronaversary. Yeah.
So we only have a few minutes left and we want to get to the next potential books. Anything else, Mark? Any final comments on your Brody's notes, Cole's notes, that anything I didn't ask that you wanted to make sure that we
chatted about? No, I think that was good. That will give you a taster. And don't forget, I'm going to hold it up again. You'll probably see it. Ah, there we go. Don't care. Buy this book. I can't remember how much it was, but it's a bargain. And you've also got an intro from Tom Ahern as well.
Extra bonus, right? Yeah.
And don't forget, anyone who buys it, go and have a look at page 182. 182. You've got to read page 182.
It's the most important page in the book. You know.
The most important page. The insight on page 182. That's what you need.
Okay. So for our next book, we are going to look to our community of Fundraisers Book Club members, because we have your choice and we're going to take a vote, okay? So you're going to have to watch the Fundraising Everywhere Twitter. Mark and I will also share widely. So the two choices are, you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
Whoops, wrong side. Relationship Fundraising by the King, Ken Burnett, who we had a lovely conversation with just a few weeks ago at the Individual Giving Summit. So relationship fundraising, definitely on the list. Or another one, another classic, Asking Properly, George Smith.
Another classic.
Another classic. So I have read this book cover to cover. I have read most of this book, skimmed the whole thing, yep. But I haven't read it in full detail. So I will definitely read it cover to cover, both of them again, for the next club, depending on which we choose. Do you have an early favorite, Mark? Is there one of those two that you want to try to push people in a certain direction?
I'm very much the same as you. I've read Asking Properly, and it really is a sort of go-to book for me. Ken's book is a philosophy, and you know I am a great proponent of relationship fundraising, but like you, I've read most of it, not all, and so I perhaps wouldn't mind, an excuse to actually sit down and go through that properly. But I will do either. Yeah. I love both. It's not going to be a pain.
So we're going to ask everybody to vote, and we'll be back in a month or so when we're all reading this book together. And then over the course of the next few sections of the club, we are also going to invite some newer titles. So you and I have already discussed a few of the newer titles that we want to get in the rotation. And there's a couple of great books coming out in the next couple of months. I happen to have an inside scoop on a few great books that are coming out. So we'll be featuring some new titles as well down the road. So I'll see you for the next Fundraisers Book Club. Thank you very much, Mark Phillips.
Thank you very much. See you soon. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.